So a year ago, as most of you know, we kicked off our generosity initiative across all eight Atlanta area churches, calling it Deeper Wider. And the goal is to maximize our impact, our collective impact of all the Atlanta area churches, to maximize our impact locally, nationally, and actually globally. And if you've been attending, you know that you are actually making a difference globally. It's really unbelievable. So hopefully by now you have picked up your copy of the vision guide, and hopefully you have looked inside at the commitment card, because next Sunday is Commitment Sunday. We did this a year ago. Some of you are wondering, why are we doing it again? A couple reasons, but we want you to be here next Sunday with your card. If you forget your card, we have some extras. But anyway, the point is, for those of you who committed last year, we need to know if you're still in, because we want to budget responsibly. Some of you didn't make a commitment last year. You're ready to do it this year. Some of you weren't here last year, and this is your opportunity to get on board with what we're doing. For you, it would just be a one-year commitment, because the opportunity is absolutely amazing. And a year ago, I said, hey, we've been doing a lot of this stuff kind of with leftover, you know, margin money. What if we got serious about it? And your response has been overwhelming, and we want to make sure we get to the finish line responsibly. So that would be absolutely great. For those of you who watch online, you don't have a vision guide, but if you go to deeperwider.com, all that information is right there. And the reason we're doing this, and this is important from my perspective for you to know, it's not because your church needs your money. It's because there is more opportunity locally. There's more opportunity nationally, and because the world and the churches around the world need and are asking for your influence. That there are churches all around the world that are saying, in fact, I heard about one this morning in the green room, a church that's saying, we need more of what you're doing. Can you help us? And we want to be able to say yes to those churches and those church leaders. And here's the really cool thing. We don't attract pastors, we attract leaders. And you know this about leaders and leadership. When you give leaders a little bit of resource and you give leaders a little bit of a model, they figure out how to contextualize it for what they're doing in our country and all over the world. And it's absolutely incredible. Now, if you've been paying attention, or if you've been around, the Deeper Wider Initiative falls into three kind of big buckets where the money's going, where the investments are being made. And today, there's transformation, expansion, innovation. And today, I want to talk specifically about transformation. Transformation is what we're doing in the Atlanta area through our local churches. And today, there is going to be an ask, but it's not a financial ask. And I'll just give it to you right up front. We need about 1,000 more of you at all of our eight Atlanta area churches on the north side of town. We need about 1,000 more of you to consider getting engaged with, we don't just need you to consider it. We need 1,000 more of you to actually get involved in a Sunday morning environment and to volunteer in a Sunday morning environment at one of our eight Atlanta area churches, so that we can continue to create these transformational environments for children and for students and for their parents. And here's the promise. There's a promise that goes with it. If you say yes, if you consider it and then step into one of these environments, if you say yes, there is something that comes back to you. And that's what I want to talk for the most part about, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. Now, backing up just a second. In part one of the series, Inflection Point, I talked about the fact that the Deeper Wider Initiative actually reflected an inflection point for our organization. And as you just saw in the message preview title pack, there, an inflection point is something that happens in the past that we don't know when it's happening. But when we look back, we're like, oh, that's when it started. Oh, that's when the change was made. In fact, as we talked about in part one, you can actually identify inflection points in your personal life. There was something that happened to you or for you or with your family or in your business or maybe even in your health, where it's like, looking back, that was the beginning of something great. Looking back, that was the beginning maybe of something not so great. So back to transformation for just a moment. There are thousands of adults and thousands of college students and high school students in our churches today, in the Atlanta area churches today, who would tell you, even though they may not have this language, they would tell you that their decision to volunteer on Sunday morning in one of our environments, in Wombaland or with Upstreet on their elementary age kids, or on service programming group, or guest services, or coming Sunday afternoon to be a small group leader inside out, or hosting one of these environments. There are thousands of high schools, there's thousands of adults and high school students who would tell you that looking back, that when they said yes to that invitation, regardless of why they said yes to that invitation, it was an inflection point in their faith story or in their faith journey. That began something new. There was a heightened sense of the awareness of God. There was a heightened sense of dependence on God. There was something that happened in their faith that hadn't happened before. And the point I'm going to make today is that it probably couldn't have happened any other way. And the reason I know this is true about those thousands of adults and high school students and college students is because they tell us and they tell me. Every time I stop a volunteer or say hey to a volunteer, I see the sweatshirts and the t-shirts on and say, thank you for volunteering, thank you for volunteering. Or at your church, when your lead pastor or a volunteer sees that t-shirt and says, thank you for volunteering, you're like, are you kidding? You don't have to thank me. Thank you for the opportunity. And then they say things like, I get more out of this than I give, or I've met so many great people, or I finally have friends at church, or I finally appreciate just what our church is doing. I have so much more appreciation for the church. And so many of them say, now it's my church. Before it was the church, and then Andy was like, your church, and now it's, I feel like it's my church. And just, you know, putting it all out there, they would admit that, you know, honestly, the reason I said yes was, some people would say it was out of guilt. Andy made me feel guilty, or the lead pastor made me feel, I need to do something, you know. Some started out of guilt. Some started out of need, you know, the church has a need. Some would say a friend talked me into it and said, hey, just come along and try this out. And whatever got them, and of course them is so many of you, whatever got them across the threshold to get involved, initially, for many, it was more of an ought to than a want to. We get that. But then something changed. And when they look back on their decision to get involved, they would say, you know what? Something happened and began happening in me. And it began when I said yes to something I didn't necessarily want to do. I definitely wasn't prepared for, and I didn't know what to expect. And now it doesn't feel like a sacrifice. It feels like an investment. I have volunteers tell me all the time, you couldn't pry me out of this place. I mean, this is such an important part of my life, an important part of our family's life. It's an investment. In fact, one volunteer, and we get these great comments, we collect them. This was great. A woman said this. She said, initially, Andy, didn't tell me, I read this later, so I don't want to mislead. She said, initially, I volunteered to get as a break from adult life. She said, I'm just surrounded by adults. I work with adults. And I thought, you know what? Maybe if I can just be in an environment that's not a bunch of adults. So that's why she started, but that's not why she stays. There's a corporate pilot that we know, and he started off volunteering in Wombaland. Now he's a transit leader, small group leader for our middle school environment. Here's what he said. I wanted to read this quote to you. He said, quite possibly, the real reason I volunteer is my job. I am a corporate pilot. Besides jet exhaust, I'm not leaving anything behind that will outlast me. Now, this is an important statement because he recognized what so many people who step into these environments recognize, that I went from maybe, you know, filling a need or doing something for the church or doing something I ought to do. It started that way, but I have found a sense of purpose. I have found an element and a layer of purpose that I didn't have before. It's not like my life didn't have purpose, but I found some renewed purpose. There's going to be something to show for the time I spent with these kids and the time I spent in those environments. So to maximize our impact locally, to maximize our impact with the children and the students and the adults and the parents that are parts of our churches and part of our community. In fact, to maximize our influence on the future of our communities, wherever our churches are, I want to invite you again to consider. I would love for everybody who's not currently involved to at least consider volunteering and joining one of our volunteer teams. Now, if you never engage, and here's I'm going to press a little bit. You may disagree, but you can talk about it over lunch, or maybe not. But if you're a Jesus follower, if you're a Christian, if you never, I'm so confident of this. If you're a Christian or believe you're a Christian, and if you never engage in some form of personal ministry outside of your family, there will always be something missing. There will always be something missing in your faith experience. And I'll own this. As presumptuous as that sounds, because I don't know you, as presumptuous as that sounds, and perhaps as emotionally manipulative as that sounds, here's why I know that to be the case. What I'm about to show you, if you're new, you haven't seen this before. If you've been around for a while, this should be reviewed, but this is why I'm absolutely sure what I'm saying is true. There are five things we've discovered. This is over 40 years of conversations. There are five things that God consistently uses to ignite and to grow a person's faith. Whenever people tell their faith story, if I were to say to you, hey, tell me about your faith story. When you became a Christian, tell me. As I listen to your story, four or five of these five things will show up in your story. These are the things that God consistently uses to mature a person's faith. And we refer to these, as many of you know, as the five faith catalysts. And here they are. I'm just going to give you the whole list real quick. Practical teaching. Some people say, the first time I went to a church or a Bible study, and they didn't just tell me the theology, they told me what to do with it. I had handles for my faith. That ignited my faith. Providential relationships. I'll tell you what ignited my faith. I met this girl, I met this guy, I met this couple. There was a new family in our neighborhood. I had a boss who was a Christian, and he was open, or she was open about her faith. And that was like, I feel like God brought that person into my life. Pivotal circumstances. I wasn't paying attention to faith. God was the furthest thing from my mind. Then my wife said she wanted a divorce. My husband left. One of our children got into trouble, had a health crisis. My parents, you know, you would say got divorced, and suddenly you looked up, and looking back, you would say, you know what? One of the catalysts for my faith was something bad that happened to me. Pivotal circumstance, private disciplines, when a person starts reading scripture for their first time, when they begin giving on a regular basis for the first time, when they begin praying and having a consistent prayer life for the first time, that ignites faith. And then last, but certainly not least, is this one. It's personal ministry. People say, you know, one of the things that lit up my faith, one of the things that stretched me and grew my faith was I got invited to do something for other people. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know, but engaging, here's the thing, engaging with an individual or a group of individuals to help facilitate their faith journey will always facilitate your faith journey. And stepping into that role for the first time is almost always an inflection point in a person's faith journey. People realize that in hindsight because, and here's why this is the case, when we are faced with our inadequacy, I'm just not up to that. When we're faced with our insecurities, I'm just not going to feel comfortable doing that. And when we're faced with our fears, I don't know what will happen. I don't think I'm ready for that. When we're faced with the fact that I don't have time to do that, here's the thing. Because of all that, not in spite of all that, because of the very things that cause us to resist, the things that cause us to resist, don't miss this, positions us to have to depend on God. We're in a position to experience the presence and the power of God in a unique way, in a way that you will never experience. And this is coming from the preacher. You know, I like to talk to full rooms, full chairs. God will do something in your life in a way that you will never experience sitting in here listening to someone talk. Because sitting in rows listening to preaching requires nothing of you except patience with me. How much longer? What time is it? How long have we been here? And look, for those of you who are watching from home, it doesn't even require patience with me. That's why you've got your phone out and you're scrolling on your phone while you're sort of listening to this, you know, no guilt, but I get that, right? But that, I mean, and information is important. Practical Bible teaching is one of the faith catalysts, but it is not enough. But engaging in systematic personal ministry, in other words, when I say systematic, somebody's depending on you to show up. Somebody's counting on you to show up prepared. Engaging in systematic personal ministry accomplishes something that sitting in rows doesn't accomplish, and it accomplishes something that sitting alone at home reading your Bible and praying won't accomplish either. And here's why. And I don't know any other way to say it, so if this sounds kind of mystical, I don't mean for it to. I just don't know how to say it any better. The reason is this. When you are in a position to where you are pouring out, it creates an opportunity for God to pour in. That's the only way I know how to explain it. And so many of you have experienced this, either because of service in one of our churches or in some other context or some other environment where you just poured out and you weren't ready and you were insecure and you were afraid and you didn't know how it was gonna work out. And when you came home or you're driving home or you got, you know, after the fact, you were like, there was just something amazing. It was emotional for you. In fact, many of you, me included, have had those experiences that just thinking back on those experiences, it is still emotional for us because of what we knew that God did through us on behalf of somebody else and what God did in us that stayed with us. Every Jesus follower needs a context, an environment, a group, or a person where they can pour out. Now, I want to say something to parents real quick. This is so important. You've heard me say on multiple occasions that when it comes to children, Sandra and I are thoroughly satisfied customers. I know it's kind of weird to say it that way, but when it comes to what this church did for our children and preachers' kids, you know, they have an advantage and a disadvantage, right? But what this church did for our children, we are so extraordinarily grateful. And now all three of our kids attend one of our churches in the Atlanta area, and they're bringing their children, our grandchildren, to experience the same environment. So we are so, so, so grateful. But here's the point I want to make. Engaging, please don't miss this, okay? Engaging your kids in ministry. Engaging your kids in ministry will do more to keep them engaged with their personal faith than anything else you do. Getting your children involved in doing ministry will do more to keep them engaged with their personal faith than perhaps anything else you need to do. The challenge is we've been told as parents that our kids just need to be taught the faith. I want to get them in a class. I want to get them in a school. I want to get them somewhere where they're taught the faith. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. Don't raise your hands. Okay, this isn't confession time. I just want to make this point. How many of you were taught the faith? And then when you're old enough, you walked away from the faith. And you walked away from the Christian faith knowing all about the Christian faith. In fact, the version of the Christian faith you were taught is one of the reasons you walked away from it. Or maybe it wasn't that at all. It's just that you were taught all about it. So when somebody talks to you about Christianity, you're like, yeah, I can quote the verses. I'm just not interested. I'm out. And then life happened to you. And now you're back. But you're not back for a lack of information. And you didn't walk away because of a lack of information. It was something else. I'm just telling you. Getting your kids involved in living out on behalf of someone else, pouring out on behalf of someone else is the primary way, or I will say a primary way to keep your kids involved and engaged with their personal faith. And I know you want their faith to stick. And engaging them in faith through serving is how you do it. Because, and you know this from other contexts, not just a spiritual context, doing is stickier than listening. Doing is stickier than listening. And when they experience God using them in the life of another student or the life of another person, there's something about that. There's no replacement for it. All the Bible study in the whole world can't do for them and can't do for us what that active faith does for us. Something happens to our faith when we engage in that way. Because when you engage in that way, when you engage in a different way, your faith is activated in a different way, a way that can't happen, again, simply listening to content or even sitting alone. And the reason, and I'm certainly not discounting the importance of personal Bible study. If you knew me and knew my schedule, knew Sandra and I's schedules, you would know. We one of the things we love about being empty nesters is our morning quiet times are long and wonderful because we don't have, anyway, I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable. It's wonderful, okay? So this isn't a discounting, but I'm just telling you, as much as I love and we love reading and studying the Bible, there's something about engaging in an environment that you're not thoroughly prepared for, but you know God wants you to do it. There's something that happens. This isn't in my notes, so I just don't take this any different way than I mean it. But as I've mentioned before, Sandra and I were active foster parents for 10 years. I thought I was a good Christian. And then we started fostering kids. And we tell parents and families all the time, look, it's not for everybody. You know, you've got to feel called to do this, and we felt called to do it. But I'm telling you, I thought I had dealt with selfishness. Oh, no. Oh, no. I thought I had dealt with my self-centeredness. I mean, I'm a professional Christian. I mean, right? I mean, I preach and teach this stuff all the time. Oh, no. Stepping into that environment did, and I think we were certainly helpful for a lot of children and sibling groups, but we would both tell you what God did in us. I'm not sure there was any other way for God to surface. I know in me personally what I needed to deal with other than stepping into that environment. And that's not meant to scare you or threaten you. I'm just saying it is part of what it means to follow Jesus. Because when you read the New Testament, if you look for it, it's everywhere. Christianity is not exclusively, in fact, I don't even think it's primarily vertical. It's a horizontal faith. It is a one another faith. And you're not following Jesus if you're not one anothering some people who are difficult to one another, because God sent his son into this world to one another you, and you are difficult. You're challenging. And we prayed all kinds of prayers and broken all kinds of promises to God. All of us have, right? So this isn't an add-on. This isn't, hey, do something for the church. This is critical to your faith journey. Even if you're never able or never want to apply it within the context of the local church, everybody needs a person. Everybody needs a group that they are pouring into, because when you pour in, it allows God to pour into you, and something happens that just won't happen any other way. Because, again, read the New Testament. Christianity is not a spectator sport. You cannot, it's impossible. You cannot follow Jesus from the sidelines. And you can't follow Jesus by just learning more stuff. If you follow Jesus, I mean, if you surrender your life to Jesus, like we talk about, it's just a matter of time you're gonna get the elbow in the ribs from the Holy Spirit. It's just a matter of time you're gonna feel an internal nudge. You're gonna feel pushed or called to step into an environment that you're not ready for, you're inadequate for, you're not prepared for. You don't know what's on the other side. You're too old, you're too young, you're too educated, you're gonna feel that nudge. And when you say yes, you're gonna come out on the other side and say, God did more in me than God did through me, but he did something in me when I experienced him doing something through me and I didn't see it coming. He's going to lead you to engage with other people. And the problem is, the challenge is, in fact, one of the reasons I'm so adamant about exporting what you're doing to other churches and other church leaders is that for too many Christians, especially in the West and especially in the United States, Christianity has just been reduced to attending something. Again, you read the New Testament, you hardly even find this. In fact, it's just, can I tell you a preacher secret? Okay. And don't tell anybody I told you this. Okay. See, you know, preachers, they want more people to come to their church. Of course, you know, it's a sign of success. I get that. I'm susceptible to that. And the problem is, whenever preachers decide to preach a sermon on attending, you need to be in God's house and, you know, all that stuff, there's only one verse. We all preach the same verse over and over. It's in the book of Hebrews. We don't even know who wrote it. But I mean, because that is not the theme of the New Testament. The theme of the New Testament is one another, which requires relationships, which requires access. That's why we say circles, they really are better than rows, because circles is where life on life happens. And that's where something happens that can't happen this way. And I'm all for this room, and I'm all for the opportunity and the privilege I have to preach week in and week out. But at the end of the day, I want us to continue to be a church where men and women are engaged in the life of other people. And this is not New Testament Christianity. This is New Testament Christianity. When Christianity is reduced to simply believing things, there are things that need to get done that don't get done. And that wasn't the case in the first century, and that is not the case here, and it's never been the case here. In fact, from the beginning, we have taught and preached and modeled faith with feet. We've taught that doing is ultimately what makes all the difference. Active faith, again, faith with feet. And some of you remember, and again, if you've been around for a long time, this is gonna bring back memories. Most of you aren't aware of what I'm about to say. But every once in a while, probably maybe once or twice a year, somebody will walk up to me who's been here from the almost from the beginning and say, Andy, do you remember when? And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. Some of you, so in the early years, we had one building. I'm in it right here in Alpharetta. We had one auditorium. For those of you in the West, there was no West. There was just the East. We had one auditorium, one campus. And there were Sunday mornings, there were people sitting on the floors, sitting in the aisles, sitting along, you know, the back wall. We sent cake and cookies to the fire marshals, you know, every you know, we didn't really. But anyway, it was, there's a lot of people. And so once a year, I would preach my infamous, if you're a Christian and you don't plan to actively engage with our mission, we need your seat sermon. Now, that's not the, that wasn't the name of the sermon. That was just kind of the theme of the sermon. And I would say, look, if you come to this church and you just like the music better than the other church, or you like the preaching better than the other church, but you don't plan to ever get engaged in this church, we need your seat. Go back to your other church. We will send you the sermon and we'll tell you where you can access the music. But we're serious about what we're doing in our community, and we don't need people who are just gonna take up space. And maybe I should bring that back. Maybe I just did. Anyway, okay. No, so back to personal ministry for just a second. Okay, personal ministry, it stretches us, it scares us, we're out of our comfort zone. And here's the thing, you, for those of you who do that know this, you know, you're cheering me on in your heart because you're like, you know, exactly. Nobody has to tell you to pray. Nobody has to tell you to pray. On Sundays, I mean, I'm so prepared. I hope that's evident. We're prepared. I work with this amazing, amazing team of people. We get here early. We run through the whole service. I literally get up here and preach the sermon every Sunday morning to six people standing right here watching me taking notes with a computer, okay? Every Sunday. I mean, I want to be that prepared. But every Sunday, right before the service, I have a little room back here that I get to kind of sit and be quiet in. I literally get on my knees in my green room and say, to some extent, God, as prepared as I am, if you don't come through, it doesn't matter how well I do, and all my prayers don't rhyme, but that's what, you know, if you don't come through, it doesn't really matter what I do, it doesn't matter how prepared I am, because I'm attempting something that's impossible. I want people's lives to change. I can't change a life. I want people to go home and be better husbands and wives and kids and citizens. I mean, I want to preach for life change, and I'm incapable of changing another life, so I'm just going to do what I know to do and trust you to do what only you can do. And that never changes, and that will never change, because that's the reality of spiritual leadership, and that's the reality of stepping into someone's life to help bring about life change. And that is the invitation, and nobody has to tell me to pray on Sunday morning. And it keeps me, and it keeps anybody who's doing any kind of ministry like that, it keeps us so dependent. And so wired into the fact that every day is a gift and every day is a new opportunity. And the thing that makes the difference in another person's life is something we have no control over, but God calls us to step into it anyway. When we see God use us, our faith gets stronger. When you experience transformation on the other side of something you say or somebody you serve or something you do, your faith gets stronger because you're exercising your faith muscle. And faith is a muscle. And the only way for it to get bigger is to exercise it. And the Christians who all they do is consume, the Christians all they do is sit and they go to a thing and they go through the routine and they feel like it's conscience relief, they're not exercising that muscle. And we've never been that church and we're never going to be that church. And if you have been sitting on the edges and on the periphery and I don't know, and I get it. But if God elbows you in the ribs and if you feel the nudge, I'm just telling you, on the other side is something you may experience, that you will experience, that perhaps you won't experience any other way. Ministry to others is transformational. For the person we minister to and for those of us doing the ministry, right? The go-to example of this, and I'll make this quick, is in the New Testament, it's so interesting. The go-to example is one of the three probably most famous stories in the whole New Testament. In fact, if you're from a different faith tradition or no faith tradition, even if you didn't grow up in church, you've heard bits and pieces of this story. Jesus one afternoon commands his 12 disciples to do something they are 100% incapable of doing. It was completely beyond their capacity. He turns to them one afternoon and he says, famously says, "You give them something to eat." They didn't even have lunch for themselves. And he looks at a crowd of, one gospel says 5,000 men, which meant maybe 10,000 people, who knows, massive crowd. "You guys, give them something to eat." Jesus had been teaching all day. You probably know this story. It's hot, it's late, the sun starts to go down. These people have walked for miles and miles, many of them. And the disciples are actually the ones, this is my opinion, I think the disciples are the ones that are tired and hungry, but they're not about to say, "Jesus, we're tired and hungry." They're like, "These other people, they're all tired and hungry. So you need to send them." In fact, it's interesting. It's one of the few times in the New Testament somebody tells Jesus what to do. They're like, "Hey, Jesus, here's what you need to do, because aren't you lucky to have us? Send the crowds away so they can get to nearby villages and find something for them and their families to eat." And I think Jesus pauses and looks out at the crowd and crosses his arms and turns back and looks at them and grins and says, "I got a better idea. They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And this was a day, we know from the Gospels because of where it shows up, this was a day the disciples never forgot. Why? Because they agreed to step into trying to do something they were 100% incapable of doing. And they experienced God doing something through them that was beyond their capacity. Here's the question. Why did Jesus ask them to do it? Here's why. Because he knew sitting and listening even to the Son of God was not enough to activate their faith in a way that he knew their faith would need to be activated based on what was coming down the road for them. These are the men, 11 of the 12, these are the men that ultimately turned the world upside down, not because of what they knew, because of what they did with what they knew. Every Christian, every Jesus follower, in just about every season of life, needs a context or an environment, a group where they can pour out. And I know this, I just illustrated that I know this. There are many, many ways to do this outside the context of a local church. I get that. And many of you are doing extraordinary things in different organizations and different places in our city. I get that, and I so appreciate that. You know we do because of what we do with Be Rich and our Intersect partners. But your church, our church, has opportunities for you as well. And we need about 1,000 of you to step up, because transformation is core to what we do. Transformation is core to what the church does. And again, we need some more of you to engage in the process. And real quick, to those of you that are already engaged, those of you wearing your sweatshirts and your t-shirts that show up every Sunday and walk the halls and rock babies and sit in carpet circles with kids or host and give out candy, are the amazing, mostly men who are out here before I get here setting up cones and making sure people are greeted, and guest services and our service programming directors in all their black shirts and jeans that you can't see backstage making all this happen possible. For all of you who fall into those categories and the ones I've left out, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I hope you hear me say that enough, because every time I see one of you, I try to stop and say, thank you. We could not do what we do without you. To those of you who are at home and you could be here, we need you. And maybe you need to be here, not because the sermon's gonna be any better, not because the music's gonna be any different, but because of an opportunity to experience God working through you that you can't experience any other way. And that's not to make you feel guilty. It is an opportunity. And I think it's an opportunity, if you take advantage of it, you will never, ever regret it. And if you don't believe me, ask Mike and Lachey. Take a look at this.
Last year, I heard the invitation to serve at Transit.
I just remember Andy preaching that sermon, Made for More.
I decided to jump in.
Because I felt God just pushed me and was like, that message is for you and you need to do something about it.
I couldn't have known what was in store for me when I made that decision.
Especially when I got to take my group of sixth graders to our first camp together.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm a new sixth grade transit leader, and we're headed to camp.
Hey, I'm Lachey. This is my first sixth grade camp, but with coffee and co-leaders, it's gonna get done.
So I'm 61, my youngest kid is 21. It's been a long time since I've been around middle schoolers. So yeah, that's a little bit nerve-wracking.
I think I'm really nervous about making sure like every girl is accounted for and keeping everybody together. And my plan this weekend is to make sure they're fed, fed, and fed.
What I hope to leave with these kids is the same thing I got when I was that age. You know, someone poured into me. You know, that's a big thing that I would like to get out of the weekend.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling excited. I'm ready to see what God's gonna do this whole weekend.
A great time so far. Kids are great. Middle schoolers aren't as bad as I thought.
Just seeing these kids just be a kid who loves Jesus. It's beautiful to see like all this come together. Wishing I was the kid here and I get to be the kid here as a small group leader.
For sixth graders, it's good for them to see that Jesus is cool, right? I mean, it's cool to be a Jesus follower.
You really don't have to know everything. You just show up. You just show up ready.
God's gonna do the work, not me. You know, let them know that middle school's not easy and we're gonna be here to have your back.
A lot of them are just glad to be here. One of them, she just said, I just thank God for a church like this. And I'm so glad to be a part of it.
Last night's session was amazing. Everybody was very willing to share in small group and they asked some really good questions.
Small group was very emotional. It was very healing. In each one of those girls' stories, I saw me. I saw something in them that was me.
Camp this week has been a lot of fun. I had a blast. I think I really enjoy being with this age group. And maybe it is because deep down I am a middle schooler. Maybe that's why I can relate.
We really enjoyed this. We had no low moments. And if I could do it again, I would. If we came back next weekend, I would.
Now, here we are, 8 months later, and I'm still grateful that I made that decision to volunteer. Now, my love for our church and my community is even deeper.
Serving has brought a lot of peace into my life. I feel like it's done more for me than what I thought it would do for me. These girls just don't know that I need them more than they need me, and these past 8 months have proven just that.
I would say if somebody is thinking about serving, just jump in. Just do it. You're going to get so much more out of it, and it's an opportunity to give back to your church.
You're not going to want to say no because of what you see.